Welcome to the Silver Screen Podcast. I'm Jared Boomer.
And I'm Katie Gainey. This is a podcast about movies and pop culture.
And on this episode, episode number 45, we're going to be talking about the new Pixar movie that is in theaters right now, Onward, which has voice acting by Chris Pratt and Tom Holland and some other people. So we'll get into that here in just a second. Katie, how are you today?
I'm great. Thank you, Jared. I am healthy, which I am grateful for every minute that passes by.
Me too. Just before we started recording this episode, the NCAA announced that they will not have any fans at March Madness games due to coronavirus. So I have to admit that will be a little odd to watch on television, March Madness game with no fans in the stands. But I think it was probably the right decision because we've seen in other countries where they have done this that it does help stop the spread and kind of gets the virus under control in certain areas. So I think that's probably the right move, even though it hasn't gone to a full-on outbreak here yet in the United States. I still think that's probably the best decision.
I agree. It makes me sad though too. I thought it was so crazy too. We had recorded the episode about Contagion. Mm-hmm. And then I read several articles that were talking about how there has been such an uptick in that movie. That movie in particular. Yeah. And I was like, oh, we started a trend. I mean, it's not going to look that way because of when the episode came out and everything, but it was weird that we thought to do that movie and then covered it. And then, you know, how popular, unfortunately, that movie's gotten again because of the virus.
Yeah. I saw something that like it's gone, you know, there's been way more like streaming purchases of it and people are just watching it more like, cause you know, that's very relevant to what's going on right now. Granted, like we talked about in that episode, the disease that they have in that episode is definitely more fatal than coronavirus and, you know, affects people a lot faster, but still with the whole spread and everything, it's definitely relevant. So, but we are not talking Contagion today. We are talking Onward, which is the brand new Pixar movie. They have two movies coming out this year, this one and also Soul, which will be out a little bit later on this year. And I have to say, Katie, going into this, I was not super excited for this one. I knew it was Pixar, so I thought it was probably going to be good. But Soul with Jamie Foxx is definitely the one that I was looking forward to more this year of the Pixar releases. I don't know how you felt, but I just didn't really have that. Like last year, we did Toy Story 4, and I was really hyped to see that movie. But this one, I didn't really have any feelings, you know, going into it that I was really excited to see it or anything.
Yeah, this was definitely, I had the same feeling about it as you did, but Soul looks amazing. I agree with you. I actually, my Soul's probably a top contender for me, or like one of the ones I'm most excited about. But also In the Heights, I cannot wait for In the Heights. And every time I hear that music at the beginning of the trailer, I just freak out.
Yeah, In the Heights should be good, too, which is by Lin-Manuel Miranda. It was the play that he did before Hamilton. So it'll be cool to see that. And they've announced a couple weeks ago that they're making Hamilton into a movie, too. So.
Oh, I know. Hey, also, just in, I feel like I get alerts about great actors dying and stuff happening while we're filming. But this will, of course, be late news by the time it comes out. But they just said that now the late night shows are going to film without live audiences because of coronavirus. So like Colbert and stuff is not going to have a live audience for a while.
I knew they had already said that like Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy were going to do that, but it kind of makes sense that they're just, all the shows are probably going to do that now. So, which again, it'll be weird to watch like Jimmy Fallon with no applause or laughs or anything like that. That'll just be very odd.
I mean, I wonder if they're going to do like laugh tracks and things. They might not. I don't know. But I'm so glad that they're taking this seriously. I was thinking last night, I saw the movie last night, like I saw Onward, and I was extra cheerful. Like I thought, this is the movie I need to see right now. And I noticed during the film for a brief moment, I remembered things like, oh, it's election season. And oh, coronavirus is taking over the world. And I was really happy to be in this movie watching something so pleasant and happy.
It is a very happy movie and a really good story about brotherhood and, you know, being there for each other and kind of getting out of your comfort zone a little bit. We'll talk about all those things as we kind of go on here, but was released on March 6th, an hour and 42 minutes long. On IMDb, it is a 7.7 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes, critics score 87%, audience 96%. So very good scores overall, which I thought that was an interesting thing when critics were saying, you know, this isn't on the level of a Toy Story or a Coco or something like that, but it's still good. But then you look at the critics score and it's still at 87%. So you're like, that's one of the highest rated movies that has come out this year so far.
Yeah, the scoring totally threw me off because I actually thought this movie was great. It's not my favorite Pixar of all time. Mm-hmm. It's not the best movie of 2020, even though I haven't seen all the movies yet. But I really liked it. And I was thrown by the audience and the critic scores because they are different. And I think it's very weird that you see audience give it almost 100. Like, that's just, yeah, to me, doesn't seem to happen a lot. And then it was even weirder because IMDb only 7 out of 7 is not, to me, not great. It's not the best. It's like a C plus. So yeah, I'm just thrown by this because I had a really positive view of this film, but all I've heard people say or read is that it's not as good as Pixar's movies normally are.
Yeah. So I don't know if I totally agree with that. Like we've said, it's not our favorite Pixar movie, but I still think it's very good. And if here's the thing, if it wasn't a Pixar movie, people would be mm-hmm. talking about how good this movie is. Like if DreamWorks or somebody right, like that had right. put that out, you know, it's just because it's from Pixar and maybe it's a little less quality than, you know, things they put out, but they put out masterpieces. So every once in a while, if you're, you know, putting out an A movie instead of an A++ movie, I think you're still doing pretty well.
That's a really good point. I think you're absolutely right about that.
So box office wise, this has made $41 million domestically so far, worldwide about $70 million. And it's a little bit down, which makes sense. The coronavirus is definitely affecting box office right now, especially worldwide box office. So it had a production budget of about $135 million. So it's made about 70, what we said, 70 million so far. So it'll definitely mm-hmm. make its money back. But I think coronavirus did have a little bit of impact on the box office. We both went to weekday showings and they were very light. Granted, normally when I go to a movie, it's pretty light crowd because of my work schedule. I normally go on like a Tuesday afternoon at like 3 o'clock. So that's, I can't really judge based off of that. But I know you went last night, Tuesday night, and that's discount day for your theaters. So yep. normally it's pretty busy, but you said there weren't a ton of people in there.
Yeah. And there were about 10 or so. There were a lot of young kids, but I actually, when we left, it was 10 o'clock at night. But okay. I don't think kids here are on spring break yet, but I was thinking, I know at least my cousin, she's a professor, they're on spring break. So I would imagine it's not the kids' spring break now, but I thought maybe that could affect it. Maybe kids are staying up later, or I thought maybe this crowd is smaller than normal because of coronavirus. I just couldn't really tell, mm-hmm. but it wasn't terrible. There were plenty of people at the theater, though. I'll say that.
Okay,
like at the theater in general, there were plenty of people.
Gotcha. And you went like what, 7:45? So I could see how that yep. if they parent has young kids, you're like, it's 1 hour and 45 minutes. This is going to be out, you know, pretty late. So I could see possibly like the 5 or 4 o'clock showing of this being a little busier, just because it would have gotten out at 7 or something right. like that. So
oh. I wanted to tell you, this is just random news, but I'm so pumped. I am getting Little Women today, my copy of Little Women on Blu-ray.
Ooh,
and
oh, boy.
And at this point, I rarely buy movies mm-hmm. anymore. So it has to be one that I know I'm just going to watch over and over again and treasure. So I'm getting that. And I'm considering Parasite. I definitely want to own Parasite, but yeah. I'm just going to see what the deal is, like if there's a deal at Target or something. But I'm pumped that I'm getting Little Women today. So I wanted to let the world know.
And I saw that 1917 will be out on DVD in a couple of weeks. So I might pick that one up because I really liked that one from last year. So yeah, if you missed some of these Oscar movies, they're starting to come out on DVD and streaming sites and stuff. Some of the ones that came out later. So you should be able to watch those very soon if you missed those. And we have episodes on all the nominees for Best Picture, which you can find if you just scroll through the back episodes wherever you're listening. So you can just watch the movie and then go listen to the episode on the movie that, you know, was nominated for Best Picture. So the synopsis for Onward here is that it's set in a suburban fantasy world. Two teenage elf brothers, Ian and Barley Lightfoot, go on a journey to discover if there is still a little magic left out there in order to spend one last day with their father, who died when they were too young to remember him. And just from that synopsis, you know that this is going to be an emotional movie.
Oh my gosh, I had no idea because I had seen one preview. I think I'd seen one preview once months ago
okay.
and never saw a preview, like never watched a preview again. So I didn't even remember that going into this, and I was not emotionally prepared for what was going to happen to me.
So we'll read some critics' reviews now of the movie. The first one is from Charlotte O'Sullivan of the London Evening Standard, who says, "Do families need fathers? Scanlon, who is the director, Dan Scanlon, of this movie, delivers a love song to atypical clans, which couldn't end on a sweeter or clearer note."
I liked this one. I thought this was good. At first, when I was reading the comments, because I usually get the critics' things from Rotten Tomatoes, mm-hmm. and I thought, do families need fathers? So I was like, oh, this is harsh. But then I read the rest of it. I do think this was a nice shout out to, like, when she mentions atypical clans, because there are all types of families now, people that are living with grandparents, people that live with aunts and uncles, people who have one parent homes or same sex parent homes. I mean, you never know. But I thought that was a really good point to make, because this movie really deals with a lot of questions and topics about brotherhood or siblings in general. So I liked that a lot.
And that was going to be one of my likes too, is that I thought that the end of her quote saying that it couldn't end on a sweeter or clearer note, that was one of my likes, is that they really did nail the ending of this movie. I thought the last 20-30 minutes was very, very good, honestly, with the whole everything that happens and then how it ends. I thought they just did a really good job with that, which we'll get into when we talk a little bit more in depth about the plot and spoilers and things. So next up is Jake Coyle of the Associated Press, who says, as a Pixar entry, it may be the first to explicitly grapple with not the trials of childhood, but the fraught onset of adulthood. By the time Onward has wrapped its journey, it will probably be the only movie with a manticore to make you cry.
Hi, this is so sweet. Well, and if people hear that reference and they haven't seen the movie, manticore is a character in the movie. Otherwise, you're going to be like, what does that mean? But I specifically liked this quote because I thought he grabbed... there was a really good thing he brought up, and that this deals a lot with the early stages of adulthood.
Yeah.
So being a teenager, like late stage teenager about to go to college, or, well, he's 16, but his brother is older. I don't think they ever say how much older, but to me, he seemed like 18 or 19. But I thought that was a good point, and I'm glad that Pixar's kind of going in that direction, because I think all ages can enjoy these films, but it's nice to deal with something that's not just a cute 6-year-old.
Yeah, and I think you're right on the age thing, because the mom character at one point, Laurel, says, like, this is the longest gap year ever, when she's referring to Barley doing something. So I think, it can be assumed that he's probably graduated high school and is, you know, a couple years older than Ian, who, you know, is 16. So, but yeah, I really related with the character of Ian in this movie, just thinking back to how I was when I was like 16 or 17, because I was homeschooled and a little more introverted, which this character is. So I definitely related to his character a lot, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. And then next up we have Asher Luberto of LA Weekly, who says, Pixar specializes in grounding storybook worlds in real world problems, and this one does so with a sprinkle of pixie dust and a dash of realism.
I liked this quote. I don't really have much to say. I did pick it, though, because Asher is not someone we usually pick quotes from, so I was trying to diversify a little bit. But I like this quote. Nothing was mind-boggling for me on this one.
No, I did really like the way that they set this movie, the environment. Like, obviously, it's dealing with, you know, elves, and that, you know, there's a police officer that is like half human, half horse, and there's the manticore, obviously, but like they still go to school, they have cell phones, they have cars. So I thought, we'll make these kind of fictional characters in like a real world setting was an interesting thing that I thought worked actually pretty well for the movie.
I would agree. Definitely agree.
And then finally, we have Joe Morgenstern of the Wall Street Journal, who says, it's enjoyable enough if you don't mind machine-made entertainment, but so desperate to please that it wears out its welcome long before the closing credits.
Yeah, I mean, I strongly disagree with this gentleman. He just seems cranky. But again, it's not a perfect film. And also, he's not someone we normally pick. So that was mainly why I picked that. I just strongly disagree with him.
Joe is definitely a guy that says, I'm going to the theater, like, just from this review.
For sure. Like, he's like, this is cinema.
Yes.
Jared, still one of the funniest things you've ever said.
I forget which episode that was in, but it's in one of the previous episodes, if you go listen.
But it was I think it was one of the things we weren't super impressed with.
Yeah. Oh, The Lighthouse. It's in the episode with The Lighthouse. Yeah.
Episode 39, people.
Yes.
The Lighthouse.
We talked about how people loved The Lighthouse, and those people that loved The Lighthouse are the ones that say, this is cinema. This is movie making. So, and
this
Joe,
I
think, is one of those people, because of his quote of machine made entertainment. He's probably referring to Disney, who just cranks these things out about once a month or once every other month, you know, animated or live action movie kids for kids, which is fine. And we need those. And I thought this one was pretty pretty good. So I'm going to disagree with Joe there. As we mentioned, this one is directed by Dan Scanlon, who has worked on a lot of Pixar films, including Toy Story 4, Incredibles 2, Coco, Inside Out, and Monsters University. And he's directed Monsters University. Pixar is kind of unique in the fact that they're a fairly big size company, but in terms of directors, they have about four or five people that will direct their movies. And you kind of just work your way up through the ranks at Pixar. So like if you work on something, you might get a chance to direct something eventually, but they don't really go out of their company for directors, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Like, it would be very weird if Steven Spielberg would, you know, direct a Pixar movie or something. Like, they pretty much keep it in-house. And I think that's one thing that makes them really good is that the directors are so connected to the process the whole way through, like the writing and the animating and all of that stuff, that I think they have a really good grasp on their movies. So I've always kind of thought that was interesting about Pixar, how they don't really get outside directors. It's just people who work for the company already.
Yeah, I noticed that too. His name didn't seem as familiar to me, but I noticed like Pete Docter was listed as in the credits as well. And I was like, oh, yep, it's all the same people. But I think that that's good that they're loyal in that way. And I think it makes a lot of these films kind of cohesive.
I think so too. So we will take a quick break here on the Silver Screen Podcast, and then we'll come back and talk about the cast for this movie and also our likes and dislikes. That's coming up in just a minute. And we're back here on the Silver Screen Podcast talking about the movie Onward, directed by Dan Scanlon and starring Tom Holland, Chris Pratt, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and Octavia Spencer. And we'll go into a little more detail on the cast now, starting with your boy, Tom Holland.
Had to give a crush alert to Tom Holland. I love him. I know I've mentioned him on the podcast multiple times. He is tied with Timothy Chalamet for my inappropriate crushes. actually, though, if I had to pick, I think I'd pick Timmy first, but okay. Whatever. It's fine. It's fine. But Tom Holland plays Ian Lightfoot in this movie. He is best known, of course, for Spider-Man in Spider-Man Homecoming and Spider-Man Far From Home. He has 5 upcoming projects, Jared. 5.
That's a lot.
And they've already said there's going to be another Spider-Man sequel in the works. And then he has other projects, one of which is called The Devil All the Time, another called Cherry, and one called Chaos Walking. So those will be coming out this year or in 2021.
Nice.
Then we have Chris Pratt, who I don't need a crush alert for. He's fine. He just doesn't do it for me.
Okay.
But I know he does for a lot of people. So I'll just a moment of silence. Anyway, Chris Pratt, he plays Barley Lightfoot. He's best known, of course, for playing Peter Quill in Guardians of the Galaxy and Andy Dwyer in the beloved show Parks and Recreation, takes place in Indiana. Shout out. He has 4 upcoming projects listed, including Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 and a movie called The Tomorrow War.
And I think for Chris Pratt, maybe one of like the biggest glow ups in Hollywood, because when he was in Parks and Rec, he was still funny, obviously, like he is now, but he was just a little more chubby and heavy set, but then he got like ripped for Guardians of the Galaxy. So
Jared, that was an excellent use of the word glow up. So thank you for that. Way to be up with the slang.
Thank you.
Down with the slang. Oh no. I just sounded like I was 94. Moving on. I did pick 4 cast members. This one's really short, but I thought it would be rude to not mention her. Julia Louis-Dreyfus plays Laura Lightfoot. She is the mom of Ian and Barley. She is best known for her roles in Seinfeld and Veep, and she is currently starring in the movie Downhill, which is with Will Ferrell.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, we have my girl. I mean, there was no way I wasn't going to mention her, Octavia Spencer. She plays the Manticore, which is an adorable character, kind of a mix of like a lion / minotaur, just couple different animals together. She's, of course, starred in Fruitvale Station, Gifted, The Shack, The Shape of Water, Hidden Figures, and The Help. She has already been nominated for 3 Oscars, and she won a Best Supporting Oscar for The Help. Soon you can see her in the TV series about Madam C.J. Walker, who was America's first African-American self-made millionaire. I just had to call that out because I think a lot of people don't know about her. And I knew about Madam C.J. Walker because she made Indianapolis the home base for her company in 1910. She did like hair care products, but it was for African-American hair.
Yeah. Yep.
And so there's still a building downtown. You can see it has Madam C.J. Walker on it. And then also when she, at the time of her death, she was the wealthiest woman in America. So she was amazing. But the series will premiere on Netflix on March 20th. So I just wanted to mention it because I will definitely be watching it. I love Octavia Spencer. And then if for some reason we do have to be quarantined or work from home or something, I thought it was a good contender, maybe for the podcast, or at least we could talk about it in the news section.
Yeah, I think that'll be interesting when that comes out on Netflix here very soon. So,
and Jared, I know I've told you, but I've met Octavia Spencer. So just wanted to throw it back out there again in case she's listening. So I love you. Okay.
I'm assuming she was as nice in person as she is when you see her do interviews and things like that. So
she was wonderful. I feel like she actually is probably one of the most down to earth people. And I recently read a really good article. My cousin lent it to me. It was a magazine in Southern Living. And she just seems so down to earth. And she talks about how her faith is the reason she feels like she's on a good path and has made good decisions with her life. I love her outlook. So she's definitely one of my favorite actresses and favorite people in Hollywood.
So now we'll move into our likes and dislikes for this movie. We are going to talk a little bit about spoilers here. So if you haven't seen Onward, you may want to come back after you've seen the movie, because I think we will have to get into some spoiler type things to really talk about this movie in depth just because of what happens. So just know that going forward, spoiler warning right now for Onward. But I know one thing that we've already mentioned a little bit is that going into this movie, neither of us had super high expectations for it. Again, we know it was Pixar and we know that they put out good movies, but I don't think we were really super pumped, either of us, about it, because, you know, there's just been other Pixar movies that I think have anticipated more. But I know you and I both were really kind of blown away by this movie. And I think one thing was, you know, it is with like elves and magic and kind of, you know, that kind of lore and stuff like that, which doesn't really appeal to me that much. So that was one of the, I think, turning off points for me looking at the trailers and stuff. But overall, I really enjoyed that part of the movie and how they decided to use those characters and set it in this kind of fantasy world.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm just not normally, I don't read fantasy. I mean, I think I've mentioned even on the podcast, I've only been interested in Harry Potter, Game of Thrones. That's the kind of fantasy I'll get into. And Lord of the Rings. I do love Lord of the Rings, but this was so delightful. The whole movie, I didn't even know that I could pick specific things that I liked about it, except like it had so much heart to it. And it touched me in so many unexpected ways. I have a brother that I care very much for, but I obviously am not a brother. The movie focuses a lot on that relationship, but I think it was truly touching for anyone, whether you have a sibling or not, maybe just a best friend. And then it also talks about just our love for our parents. I don't think it has to be that you've lost a father or something. It was just a deeply moving film. And also the magic and stuff was so cute. I like the way they incorporated magic. It wasn't silly and a lot of incantations and spells and things. It was just kind of like, if you believe, you can make this happen, which was adorable. Yeah.
Your heart's fire. You got to have that heart's fire.
Your heart's fire.
Another like for me was I thought that the action sequences in this movie were really well done. There's a couple of them. The one at the end with the dragon I thought was really great. One of the best like closings to an animated movie I've seen in quite some time. Really made me feel like anxious and caring about the characters, what was going to happen there. There's a couple other scenes in the movie that I think of. They're driving on the interstate at one point and it's, you know, there's a lot of traffic and stuff, and that's kind of a good action sequence. The one with the manticore, I thought, when they first meet the manticore, I thought was very good. The one where they're going down that river and then, you know, it starts flooding and they basically have to figure out a way to get out, thought that was great too. So really the action in this movie is really good for a kids movie.
I couldn't agree more. I did a couple things though. So I kind of laughed the dragon thing because I put that in my dislikes only because I'm mixed about this. The dragon curse at the end, I kind of was like, oh, I guess they have to have some sort of villain or some sort of scary thing because the quest that they went on and all the obstacles they overcame probably wasn't enough. And it wasn't a true villain, if you will. I say that with air quotes, even though you can't see me, but I thought that the dragon was kind of like, oh, this is the best they could come up with. But as I thought about it today, I have better feelings towards it because I think it was really cute. And that's like an idea that is okay for children, because if they made it any scarier, like a scarier character or scarier looking, I think that could have been too much for children.
Yeah.
So I understand why they did it.
Yeah, I was going to say I really liked the design of the dragon, how they just had it basically be the high school and its
mascot.
Face had a,
that was
a,
so cute.
Yeah, its face had a smile on it and everything. So I think, like you said, they probably had discussions like, hey, we want to have a dragon, but we want it not to be super scary, like still scary, but not like fiercely looking scary.
Yeah, so, he's accessible. Yeah.
Yes.
But I do get what you're saying. And I agree, though, about the... as far as just being, I physically reacted to things going on. Like there were moments where they had been running from something mm-hmm. and they would stop, you know, like everything would slow down, the music would stop, and I would be breathing heavily. Like I was like, like as if I had just overcome some obstacle. I remember the scene that made me panic to no end. I'm not even particularly afraid of heights, but there's a scene, I know you'll know what I'm talking about, where they have to go, they have to get a drawbridge down, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he uses a spell to walk across this gorge. And halfway through, his brother ties a rope around him just in case. It's kind of like a harness, but then the rope comes untied. And so if he figures out, because Ian is kind of scared of things, if Ian finds out that this rope isn't holding him anymore, he'll fall to his death. And I was so on edge. I wish somebody would have recorded my reaction because I was just straight panicking. But yeah, I think that that really is such a skill that Pixar has that even if you're watching an animated film, I still get as nervous, if not more nervous and more invested in these characters.
And I think, too, that's one thing that we've talked about before is like you get us invested in the characters and then you put the characters in the situations that, you know, we feel for them. I feel like sometimes movies do that in reverse. You either don't care about the characters or the situations don't have high enough stakes. So you don't really care what happens. But like we talked about with 1917, that movie is so tense because you care about the characters and what they're doing and delivering that message. And I think Onward is kind of the same way with the characters. You really care about them and their relationship and want them to succeed. So, and speaking of the characters, the voice acting in this is great as it is in most Pixar movies, but they picked the perfect people for the roles that they had kind of envisioned. You know, Tom Holland is definitely seen as more of like a skittish type person that is, you know, very like, he's very skinny. He's very boyish faced. So I think that works well for the character of Ian and his voice too. And then Chris Pratt being the older brother, Barley, just like, let's go on this adventure and let's have a lot of fun. Like really channeling some of like Andy Dwyer from Parks and Rec. I felt like in that role of just like, I don't really care. Like, let's just go do this. It doesn't really matter what happens. So I thought the voice acting was really good. And then Octavia Spencer as the Manticore, I thought she did a great job too.
Yes, Octavia Spencer was probably my favorite character overall, the Manticore, mm-hmm. but Chris Pratt, I think, was made to do animated films. He reminds me, this is quite a compliment because Chris Pratt doesn't do it for me like some people, but this, what I mean to compliment is that he reminds me of Tom Hanks, how Tom Hanks, I think his voice is so distinctive and he's so enthusiastic. He's perfect for Pixar and animated films. And I think that Chris Pratt is a lot like that because he has a very distinctive voice and a really exuberant way of like delivering lines and saying things.
Well, and even on the Toy Story 4 episode, we talked about that clip of Tom Hanks on one of the late night shows talking about how when you do an animated movie, you really have to just, you know, overreact to things that are going on and really project and have a lot of emotion because your voice is the only thing that you can go off of. People can't see your face. So I think that that's a really good point is that these voice actors, they kind of have to put in, even though we might look at it as, oh, just go in a studio and record their voice and then they get paid for it. That seems pretty easy, but they do have to really put a lot of effort in to voicing these things to make them believable and to make them sound good. So,
yep.
I thought this film, like you said, one of your likes is that it was funny. I thought it was pretty funny. I didn't think it was as funny as maybe some other Pixar films, but there definitely had a few moments where I did laugh out loud, which I thought was kind of funny. So there was definitely some funny lines in this though.
Yeah, I can't recall specific lines. I just know that there were times I laughed that the kids weren't laughing and I was a little embarrassed, like the kids in the theater. But I found so much of this movie to be funny, especially the Manticore, though. and then I just thought the relationship between Ian and Barley was adorable. So many things they said together. I was like, oh, I've said that to my brother before, or I could imagine my brother saying something like that to me.
And I really liked, too, another like was the character of the Manticore. I thought that was a really good character for the adults seeing this film because I felt like the basis for that character was this person has lived their life for so many years kind of just doing the same thing and just kind of being okay with that, but never really taking chances or taking adventures. And then obviously she does decide to break out and remodel the restaurant and go on this quest and everything. So I thought that was really relatable. You know, if you're somebody that's like, I've been stuck in the same job for 10 years, I don't really love it, but it pays the bills. Like, that kind of mantra was kind of the basis for this character. And I thought that was really the character that probably adults related more to in the film.
Yeah, that's a good point. That could be why I liked her so much. And this movie, ultimately, my favorite thing or the main takeaway for me was I'm so impressed with how Pixar does things. Like, how, especially with animated films, where I do think they're getting better about representation. I think they could work on that. But I like animated films because I do feel like it's less exclusive. And I've just been thinking a lot lately with doing improv, performing improv and stuff like that, how Pixar reminds me a lot of improv, because a lot of the things, like there was a moment again where I was truly invested in the film last night, but I kind of, you know, it makes you think about your life and reflect on yourself. And I was thinking about how if I told someone, you know, just in an office setting, we're doing some group exercise, if I was like, hey, pretend you're casting a spell and there's a dragon chasing after you and you have to go on this quest and there's this van named Guinevere, they'd be like, what are you talking about? You're crazy. Go take medication. But I feel like with Pixar, it's a lot like improv. They're similar, where you go there and you go along for the ride and you buy into everything they're doing. You just say yes to it. You accept what's going on. And I love that, because so many things happen in this film. And I think that's initially what I was hesitant about, was magic and all that stuff. I thought, oh, is this going to be, I'm not going to buy into this. And they look like trolls, but we find out they're elves. Just all the characters, the animals or creatures, whatever they were, I just thought, I'm not going to buy into this. But then the minute this film started till the very end, I was fully invested and fully believed in everything that was happening. So kudos to Pixar. I mean, I thought this movie was exceptionally well done.
I think they do that. Pixar really is the king of doing that well, of like setting up environments and you just kind of go along with it. Like Finding Nemo, it's talking fish. Like that shouldn't work. Toy Story, it's talking toys. Like that also shouldn't work, but it does. And we believe it. And then, you know, you see Woody on screen and you cry. So it's like, and same with this movie. Like there was a few points where I teared up a little bit too, because I really thought it was really well done. So they are really great at doing that. And then I have, two more likes real quick. I wanted to say, even though it's not really a character, I really liked Guinevere, the van. I thought that was really just a cute thing to include in the movie, like something that totally Barley's character would have, as far as like this really old car that he's kind of fixed up and drives around and everything. But I thought that added a lot of character to the movie. And actually, Disney has made a real life Guinevere that they've been like rolling around Disney World right now, which is kind of cool. So
that's adorable.
So people can like take pictures next to it and stuff. So I saw that online today while I was looking up stuff for this movie, but it's like, that's cool. So you can go check
that
out.
That's adorable.
And then I know one of like of yours too was the music as well.
Yes. I thank you so much for reminding me. So the music, I don't know that I can remember specific songs or when they played. I just remember noticing it and that I felt like it was aiding the action and whatever was going on. And also when the moments of sadness, like they're thinking about their dad or they're realizing they're not going to get their dad back again, stuff like that. And I also wanted to point out, I don't know if my sister-in-law will hear this, but we both love Brandi Carlile. Mm-hmm. And the song, the credit song that plays, is excellent. And it's Brandi Carlile. Super respected artist as well. She's most famous for The Joke, but she did that, the song that ran at the credits. And I thought it was such a good song. I immediately bought it on iTunes, but also it doesn't even have to, like, you don't have to think of it in the context of Pixar. It's just a really sweet song. So I definitely wanted to mention that. I thought that I noticed the music in this film.
Yeah, sometimes if the end credits song is really good, I will sit there and listen to it like the whole way through while the credits are going. And I did that for this movie because I thought that it was really just really well. I didn't know who sang it when it was on, but then I found out it was Brandi Carlile, who's a really good artist. And I thought it fit very well with the movie and being that it was the end credits and everything. So I thought that was a very good use of that song, and I really enjoyed that song. So yeah, that was definitely one of my likes. And then finally, before we move on to dislikes, I just want to say, if you're a parent and you have kids that might be interested in like Lord of the Rings or Harry Potter, but you feel that they may be still a little too young to watch those movies, especially like the later Harry Potter movies get pretty intense, and the Lord of the Rings movies are all rated PG-13, so they have some intense violence and stuff in them. But they're, if they're interested in that fantasy, wizard, magic type stuff, I would highly suggest this movie to you because it's appropriate for basically kids of any age. It does have a lot of magic in it and a lot of spells and kind of lore and stuff like that. So I just want to say if they're telling you like, Mom, I want to watch Harry Potter or I want to watch Lord of the Rings, and you're like, you're 7. I don't know if you're quite ready for that yet. You can show them Onward and I think they will really enjoy it. And I also wanted to say I had some little girls in front of me in the theater. They didn't seem to enjoy this movie as much. Now, there were no little boys in my theater, but I think this is a movie a little more geared toward like young boys just because they're probably a little more interested in those types of things. And there's really no like young female character that a little girl could relate to. I mean, you have the Manticore and you have the mom, but there's no like character their age that they could, like Frozen, you have Anna and Elsa. So they're like, yeah, I love Anna and I love Elsa because, you know, they're princesses and they make them to look not super old. So that was another thing that I just thought of while watching the movie, is that the two little girls who were in front of me with their parents didn't seem to like they were loving it. And I just thought, well, it seems like it's more geared toward like little boys possibly.
I see. I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, so I don't think that means that you shouldn't take your little girls to see this movie, because I think they could definitely just enjoy it. But just the ones that were in my theater just didn't seem like they were super, super into it for whatever reason. So with that, we will move on to our dislikes, which I don't have many. One of my dislikes, though, is I know why, but I don't understand why. Why was there a Simpsons short before this movie? I know that Disney bought 20th Century Fox and they want to showcase the Simpsons, but I thought it was fine. But for Pixar shorts, I know they didn't make it, but when a Pixar short is supposed to play before a Pixar movie, I expect just something a little like higher quality. I don't know. I was just a little disappointed by that when I found that out.
I actually think that's a good thing to bring up. It didn't upset me because I thought it was an adorable short. Mm-hmm. But when it started, I was like, wait, what? The Simpsons? And I was worried about it being inappropriate or mm-hmm. too highbrow for children. Like I thought, oh, they're not going to understand. So anyway.
And I know one of your dislikes and one of mine too was that the mom character played by Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Laurel, you don't really get to know too much about her. Obviously, she's kind of handling this family with her two sons and their dad has passed away. So she kind of has to take on that whole role herself. And she does, you know, they do cut to her at various points throughout the movie trying to find her sons, but you don't really learn a ton about her character. And I think maybe if there's just a little bit more in there about like her and her husband, you know, who they're trying to bring back to life for this for 24 hours for one day, I think that could have added something to the movie.
Yeah, that's honestly my only dislike that I can think of. I talked about the dragon already, that I had mixed feelings about the dragon being the curse and all that stuff. But the mom, I just was interested in her character. And I think it's because they did a good job of creating a fun character that you care about and you want to know. I guess this is twofold, the two things I didn't like. It was, I wanted to know the mom more, but I was mainly disappointed that Ian and his mom did not get to see his dad again. So this whole movie, the whole quest is because there's a spell where they can bring their dad back for one day and they can be with him until the sun sets. And Ian, it sounds like his mom was pregnant when his dad died. So he never got to meet his dad. So he has looked forward to this his whole life, and then they find out that they can do the spell. I mean, it seems like a dream come true. And I was so sad that we didn't get that satisfaction as viewers. Like, I felt like that was the one thing I would have been so happy with, is if Ian and his mom got to be reunited with his dad, but they didn't. Ian lets his brother have that moment. So I don't want to, I mean, that we said there would be spoilers, but that just made me sad. And if there was one thing I could change about the movie, that's what I would change.
Yeah, that was kind of a disappointment for me, too. I understood why they did it, but I would have really loved a moment, you know, even if it's like, I feel like you could have created an even bigger emotional punch if they defeat the dragon and they still have like 5 minutes left to spend with their dad.
Exactly,
and you spend that 5 minutes and they get to talk to him and they get to see what he's like and, you know, things like that. So the fact that Chris Pratt's character is really the only one that gets to do that, and it's very short, even you don't hear any of his interaction with the dad, and he's, you know, you never see the dad's face or whatever. And it's probably maybe a minute or something that he has to spend with him before the sun sets and he, you know, passes on. So I thought, yeah, that was one of my dislikes too. But I know you did cry twice during this movie. I did as well. I was going to ask you what parts, because the part for me that got me the most was when Ian is going through his list of things and thinking back on how he didn't get to have those experiences with his dad, but then realized that Barley was kind of taking the place of that father figure and had really set out because he was the older sibling, to do a good job since their dad was no longer in their life. And you flash back to things that had happened during the movie and realize that all the things on his list had happened, maybe just in a different way than he thought they were going to. But that was the part that I think got me the most.
Yeah, I don't want to share too much on the podcast. It's not my business or anything, but the scene when he's thinking about all the stuff he's done with his brother, which mm-hmm. is that scene that you're talking about. Yep. There was a moment where he's playing with his brother in the water, and it reminded me of someone I love very much who has lost a brother. There's a picture that's similar to that, and I just started weeping because that person has actually lost a brother. And so that made me incredibly emotional. I can't remember the other part, actually. It might have... Oh, I know what did it. It was the feet thing. So Barley tells us that he used to drum on his dad's feet. And you can tell Ian is annoyed because he's heard the story a million times. We all have that in our families. But when they initially, and also I'm fighting a sneeze, so if it comes out, please excuse me.
Okay.
Anyway, sorry. I had to say it because it's so close. Anyway, when they meet their dad or whatever, because it's just the bottom half of him, how they figure out how to communicate with him, or so he knows and is comforted knowing who he's with, they drum on his feet. And I just thought that was adorable. And I don't know why, but I lost it there.
The other part that got me was the part at the very end when Barley has talked to the father, and Ian's like, what did he say? What did he tell you? You know,
yes.
Barley asked him about his wizard name, because that was his big question for him. And he's like, his name would have been whatever it was. And Ian's like, oh, that's a pretty dumb name. And Barley's like, yeah, it is. But then he also, you know, he says something like, and he wanted me to give you this, and they just hug each other. And I thought that was a very, very sweet moment there, kind of right at the end of the movie, before we go to kind of what's the epilogue, I guess, in a way, after the main story wraps up. So that was another moment that got me, just like two brothers really connecting on a deep level. And I don't have a brother. I have a younger sister, but still, I think that if you have a sibling, I think that just kind of, you know, it got at you maybe a little bit more, just because you think about your relationship with your sibling. So.
Yeah, darn you, Pixar. I mean, I expect to cry usually, but I didn't think this one was going to get me because I forgot what it was about. So they won again.
Do you have any other dislikes for this movie?
Nope, I think that's it.
Cool. Well, I'll go ahead and give my score first for this one, because I don't think I've gone first in recently.
Please do. So, it's been a while.
My score for Onward is going to be a 92 out of 100. So... really enjoyed it. Thought it was really well done. Exceeded my expectations. I think I will still like Soul probably a little bit more than this, but I think this is a very good movie. A little bit lower than the audience scores, but kind of right in the middle of the critics and the audience. So it's going to be a 92 for me for Onward.
That's excellent. And mine is right next to yours. So I did a 90. That was the same score I gave Hustlers, which if you recall, I was wild about Hustlers, but I was like, I know this isn't like the best film I'm going to see. This is a fantastic Pixar movie. If we did another top 10, I would argue that this would probably be in my top 10 now.
Yeah.
So I loved it. There were small things I would have changed, but I think it's just more like compared to the other movies and what I've rated other movies, I just thought a 90 was fair.
There you go. That's our grades for Onward. Overall, we both really enjoyed it. So go check that one out. And then you can follow the Silver Screen Podcast on social media at Podcast Silver on Twitter and Instagram. And also just search the Silver Screen Podcast on Facebook. You can listen to us wherever you're listening to this podcast right now. And we have all of our past episodes in there too. So you can check all those out. If there's a movie, like we've said, that maybe has come out on DVD or Redbox or something that you didn't see when it was initially in theaters, but then you watch it and want to listen to some people talk about it, then go back and scroll back and find an older episode of the Silver Screen Podcast. And then our next episode will be a review of The Big Lebowski, which is its 22nd anniversary. It was actually just a couple of weeks ago at the beginning of March. So we're going to talk about that with a special guest, Katie, which is your brother.
I know, my roommate. I'm so excited to talk to him. And I'm hoping that this guest series, this new thing that we've started, takes off.
And I have actually never seen The Big Lebowski before, so I am interested to watch it and check it out and then talk about it. I think it'll be a good time on the next episode of the Silver Screen Podcast. So that'll be what is coming up next, our review of The Big Lebowski.
Until next time, we'd like to thank the Academy.